Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
We got another video game episode for you guys today. We're pretty pumped. There's some big news. Some exciting stuff happened, wouldn't you say, Zach?
Oh, definitely. We'll get into it. The PS4 was announced. We're definitely going to be talking a lot about that today. We decided to hold off on talking it the last couple episodes and just wait for the real big gaming podcast so we can devote a lot of time to it and really get into it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, and we're building some gaming PCs we decided now, so we're going to go ahead and touch on that, and we're going to do what you've been playing today, so we're excited. I'm going to go ahead and touch on how to find us. Like usual, you just got to go to iTunes, type A to Z in the search bar, hit enter, scroll all the way down to the bottom. We're under the podcast section. You just click download, and you're good to go.
We're the only ones. That's the number 2Z.
Yeah, exactly. The number 2Z. Just make sure you spread the word. Tell your friends. Get us out there a little bit. We'd appreciate it. You can also find us online. We're at a2zpodcastspokane.podomatic.com. If you need to know how to spell that, you can go back to any of our other podcasts and listen to it, or any of our first four, I think it was. And that'll tell you how to spell it, and you can find us, but really the easiest way is just on iTunes, so just trust me on that one. So we're going to go ahead and get into it. First up, the PlayStation 4 was revealed. How are you feeling about that, Zach?
Well, to be honest, leading up to it, I was super disappointed. Like, everything coming out about it was that it's more social gaming and more things to do with, like, the YouTube community, which I am not a part of. I like to watch those videos and everything, but it's not something that really does it for me. And so I was not very excited. But then after, I was at work all day, so I didn't get to actually watch the 19-hour-long ceremony that they did for the PS4. Watch short YouTube clips. I watched all the game trailers, and to be honest, legitimately excited about it. The graphics on it are amazing, which is surprising for, like, I mean, they're dumping an 8-core processor into this thing, which is awesome. And so it's really great to see, like, what they're going to be able to do with it. And the new DualShock controller does have those social gamings aspects, but it's much more downplayed than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, we'll have to reserve judgment until it comes out and it's in our hands. I'm excited, like you know, we talked about it and we weren't too super excited about it, and I didn't see why I should be, and I guess now I'm not, like, you know, gonna be beaten down the door for it to come out. But did it surpass my expectations? Absolutely it did. It looks super super good. I think probably what helped it out was the games being there, the shots of the games. I guess my favorite was probably the Killzone trailer. Just, it looked good, first of all, and then just the whole story. I liked how it's like two warring cities or groups
of people.
Yeah, the
Hellgast and the
and they're living right next to each other, and he, like, plants the C4 on it, and then he bails off and lands, like, right on the wall right before he crosses over into the other side.
Supposed to be like a Berlin Wall kind of thing, splitting the Hellgast. Yeah. I think it's the IRA. I haven't played Killzone in forever, but I know the Hellgast is the bad guys. But
that got me pumped.
Yeah, I mean, it did. Like, the gameplay footage of it is just awesome. Like, I mean, there's an explosion early in the trailer that just, like, it's a really, really great trailer that, It just looked really crisp. It looked way better than I was expecting it to look. So Killzone 4, or I guess, I don't know what they're calling it, but the newest Killzone game that'll come out when the PS4 is announced.
Yeah, it's a release title, I think. So.
Yeah, it'll be a release title, and it'll definitely be one when I buy the PS4 that I have to get, just because there aren't going to be many games. But another one, it's a working title, but it's the game that's being released for Capcom for the PS4. That one looked really, really good. There was something interesting about it, you know, like, you're fighting a dragon, there's, like, you and two other guys, and you're, like, crawling through caves. It looked a little bit Skyrim-ish-y. More on that later. But, it just looked really good. Like, it looked like really crisp graphics, and you're, like, fighting a dragon. But what'd you think?
I thought that was cool. I mean, you're just, you know, like hiding behind the pillars and the dragons like melting your shield and stuff. It looked cool. I thought the Capcom presentation was really funny. I know you didn't see it. You just saw the small little tidbit from that funny YouTube video. But that's exactly how it was. It was like the Japanese representative from Capcom was like this 4'6" dude that was really into it. And his translator was like this 6'4" bald dude in the back that was like not pumped to be there at all. And like, I know that, I understand that's what how he's supposed to act. He's supposed to be like heard and not seen. He's just supposed to be a translator and that's it. But it was just really funny. But it was sweet. Capcom's new game looks awesome. I thought it was also funny what Square Enix did. It's like they have some fruity dude up there, and I mean, not trying to be mean or, you know, start anything at all. He was just an interesting kind of guy, definitely into the Japanese culture, whatever. And then he's like, oh, after he showed the video, we have one more announcement. And then, like, the older dude comes out and it's like, ah, we're going to release a new Final Fantasy at E3. So come back to E3 and watch us. And it's like, yeah,
it's like
really?
Our big announcement is that we have a big announcement at E3. You know, it's like, oh, great job, Square Enix.
Yeah, way to go, guys.
But you know what? Like, I think that with the new PS4, maybe Square Enix has a chance to rebrand themselves with a new Final Fantasy for the new system, you know?
Yeah. Their video looked good. I don't know if you saw at the beginning. It's like this old dude with a beard and stuff.
Yeah,
his beard looked so real.
It's been floating around for a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
I've
seen that video
ridiculous
a little while ago. But yeah, it looks good. But how about that driving game that they're coming out for?
Oh, the dude that was blowing his load all over the cars?
Yeah, the cars, yeah. I mean, the leather seats aren't real enough, obviously, so he wanted to make real leather seats for a driving game.
Yeah, I give him mad props because they definitely put the time and effort in, you know.
What's the name of the game called?
Oh, sheesh. You're putting me on the spot here. I can't remember it, but yeah, it was just hilarious watching this guy talk about cars. It was an orgasmic feeling for him. And don't get me wrong, because I get into cars and motorcycles and stuff, but it was a whole new level.
Not that much.
Well, I understand, though, because it's like his life to go out and photograph these cars and take them from being pictures into being as real as possible in the video games. But I did like their idea of a video game where you have like a quote-unquote crew and you, like, race against other crews and stuff. I mean, it's a cool way to incorporate Sony's new social aspect feature of their PlayStation 4 since they're pushing that so hard.
Exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit about that social aspect, because one interesting feature that they are proposing, and let's see how it works out in real, but is, like, let's say we're playing that new Final Fantasy game, right? And I can't beat a boss for whatever reason, but you already have beaten it. I can pause the game or somehow hit the social button, and then it transfers that game data to your PS4, and then it allows you to beat the boss for me and then send it back to me to progress the story.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. At the same time, though, for you and I, it would work really well, but, you know, you're friends with a bunch of just random people on PSN sometime, and it's like, I don't just want some dude watching me play.
Yeah.
Like, you, I don't care. I don't mind if you watch me play whenever, but I don't want some other random dude just creeping on my game, you know? And like, if I don't want your opinion, I don't want them to be able to, like, watch. So I hope they have some sort of feature where you don't have to have people watch, or you don't have to do it, because that's what it kind of sounded like, was people could just join in to a room and just, like, watch you game, you know? And it's like, I'm not really into that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That's why I said we got to wait till the actual release of it comes out, and then we'll see. Were there any other games that you saw and were just blown away by?
I thought it was funny, the guy that's, like, working on the PlayStation 4 mostly, you know, he was really pushing his game hard, and I really didn't find it all that inviting to me.
Is that puzzle game one?
No, that wasn't from the guy who made Braid and stuff. No, it's not that actually
Journey.
Looked really interesting, but it was the other one. It's sort of like Ratchet and Clanky. I can't remember what it's called, but you're like this little itty bitty dude that can transform into like a huge monster thing depending on how many parts he collects. And I don't know, it just, I wasn't that into it, and they were pushing it hard. It was like the main thing they were using to visualize the PlayStation 4 with, and they had them play it on the PlayStation Vita through the PlayStation 4 and
they were
stuff.
Really pushing the PlayStation Vita.
Well, I know. They're like, buy please, a Vita? Please buy a Vita. Yeah, dude. It's just, I wasn't into that.
Well, some of the other features of it is like any game is going to be able to be played on the Vita, right? Isn't that their thing?
That's what they're hoping for by the end. I don't know if they'll get there or not. And not all games right now are going to be able to be played at launch. But by, you know, like, who knows, a year or two, they didn't really say. But they hope
by the time they release the next PlayStation Vita, whatever it's called.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? I mean, the PlayStation Vita's kind of been a failure for them. I mean,
well, in the United States.
Yeah, in the United States, but that's the only market that matters, right?
No, well, not to them. I think they probably make more money in Japan than they do in the United
States. No, I know. I was just being facetious.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, with it, they said a lot in the announcement and the whole press conference and everything, but one thing they didn't say, which a lot of people wanted to know, is how much is PlayStation 4 going to cost. Now, I've already read the reports that the games are going to stay $60. I remember back PS1 days, they were $30, and then PS2, $50, and then PS3, $60. So the next logical step would be, well, is it going to be more? And everything that I've read points to know that they're going to stay $60, but that doesn't mean that the price of the console isn't going to be ridiculous, you know?
Sure. I guess my other beef, besides them not releasing a price before we kind of move on here, is the fact that they didn't even release a picture of the console itself. They only showed the controller. I thought that was bogus, but
you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a black box.
You're right, it is, but still, it was the launch of the PlayStation 4, and you don't even show the PlayStation 4. I think that's a little ridiculous, but that's just
fair
me.
Point. Fair point. So I found this great article by Carol Pinchevsky. It's on Forbes. It's pricing the PS4, and how you can skip the wait and build one today if you were going to build a gaming computer. And it's a really interesting read. She kind of goes through, because while they didn't release a picture of it, they did release the specs and kind of what's going to be on the inside of the PS4. And she sticks really true to form. The case she gets for it is really small, like it would be if it was a console. She sticks to mini motherboards that would only fit in a console, not ones that are going to fit in a regular gaming computer. And she kind of goes through and builds it and then comes up with like an interesting, just a raw cost of it. And then how much she thinks it'll be, with Sony's discounts, because obviously they're going to buy all these parts in bulk. And then obviously by the time the price, and obviously when the PS4 comes out, the price is going to go down on some of these parts. And the raw cost would be about $680. Like if me or you were just to go on to Newegg and just buy all these parts. But approximately, they're going to sell it for $540 with the discounts. And that's not factoring in whether they want to sell it at cost, which means that every PS4 they sell, they're not going to make any profit on, which is an interesting business model, because that's kind of what they had to do with the PS3 to try and keep up with the Xbox 360, because the Xbox 360 makes so much money per console, while the PS3 doesn't. Now they do, but they make all their money back up on PSN and on the back end kind of things.
But this is all pure speculation, too. I mean, there's nothing that says the PlayStation is going to be at that around $500 mark. I mean, this is all like what she feels it is, you know,
And how much the parts cost. Like,
according to her research, or actually her husband's research. I mean, because there is no core equivalent to what the PlayStation is going to use. There is no CPU that's the same. Yeah, so
exactly, they are one of the biggest, kind of cool factors about the PS4 is that they get a custom built CPU that is 8-core, and I think it was 1.6 gigahertz, but I mean, that doesn't sound like much, but the 8 cores makes up for that, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there are 8-core CPUs out there. I mean, it's made by AMD, which right now you could go out and buy an 8-core AMD, or you could buy, an Intel iCore it's 4 cores, or 6 cores, but it's threaded, so then you actually get more cores, so it functions kind of like an 8-core. So it's not something super new, but it is cool that they do get a custom one built. You know, it being clocked in at 1.6 gigahertz isn't all that impressive, but then again, you don't really need all that much in the PlayStation. But in her article here, like we just touched on, there is no AMD core like this, so they just kind of have to go with what they felt would be the best equivalent. So I think she chooses an i5.
Yeah, well, there's two options. She picks that 6-core threaded one, and then she also picks an i5.
Yeah, the AMD one, yeah. So, you know, it like I said, it's all her opinion. It kind of goes to the GPU, too. You know, it's the same thing. She's not really sure where she wants to go with it. She picks as close as she can get to what she feels is there. Her husband did, once again, her husband, I think, was the one that did all this, you know?
Yeah.
And she just wrote it all down. It's not too bad. She says that the graphics card is going to be somewhat equivalent to, like, the 660 Ti from NVIDIA, and that's actually not too bad right now. That's a pretty decent card still. You can play almost any game nowadays on almost the highest settings, if not the highest settings. I mean, it's a good card, so good for the PlayStation 4 for getting it, but it's kind of, I mean, NVIDIA already just released their next card, the GTX Titan, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's the thing about console gaming is, like, as soon as it comes out, it's out of date.
But, yeah, I mean, exactly.
Let's back up a little bit to the price.
But that's what helps her price out. That's what's going to help the PlayStation 4's price out, is that these video cards are going to come down because of this.
Mm-hmm. And at $540, is that too expensive?
I think for a console it is. I think $500 is too expensive for a console. Because that's pretty much what the PlayStation 3 released with it. I think it was $600, wasn't it, or something like that?
I can't remember. It's been so long since
I
didn't buy one when it released. You know, I waited.
Yeah, but they had tons of issues, you know, really selling a lot of them when it first released, and I think that would be a mistake. So I don't know if they're gonna sell it for cheaper. I think the sweet spot is like $350 for a console, and I don't think PlayStation 4 is gonna be at that, but I think the Xbox is. So I think once again the Xbox is probably gonna come out swinging, even though they're gonna release later now, you know?
Yeah, and it's just interesting, you know. I think it's tough. Like, it's a, like, because, well, you have to, like, if you're going to sell the PS4, where do you draw the line? Do you, like, deficit a little bit because you know it's going to make it up on the back end? But it's a tough one to guess. I think that price of $540, just like how she came up with this article, you know, is really, really interesting, you know?
Oh, for sure. And and we'd highly recommend that you read it. We said, it's on Forbes, so go ahead and check that out for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And it really shows you, and the one of the last paragraphs in it kind of covers, like, something that I had never really thought about, but that some of the bigger boutique PC makers, you know, the Alienwares and things like that, have already basically made the PS4. The PS4 announced the specs, and then they go out and they say, hey, you want the PS4? Here it is in a gaming laptop, you know, and they sell it for like $900,000
in,
bucks,
like, a PC edition.
Yeah, PC edition, which I found that was really interesting, but...
But it is quite a bit more expensive, though, too. I mean...
Yeah.
Granted, they have four different levels that you can choose.
But, I mean,
from.
Alienware has to make their money somewhere, too. They sell, like, $5,000 gaming laptops when you could make all that stuff for half the price.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that's kind of a good segue into our next topic of making stuff for half price. And that's us sort of getting into the gaming PC world.
Yeah, we both have decided to... make our own gaming PCs. You found an awesome website, PCPartPicker.com. Highly recommend it. That it allows you to go through and pick parts to build your own custom computer. Make sure that it's always compatible. Make sure that you have enough wattage. Kind of going through this, like, I'm thinking, well, why am I going to spend so much money on a gaming computer? like going through and picking all these parts out, you know, it makes me think, why am I going to spend so much money on this gaming computer? And what's one of the reasons why you think you're kind of switching over to gaming PCing?
Well,
PC gaming.
PC gaming. Well, I'd say one big reason is because I think a new game that's going to sort of revolutionize, or it's taking a huge step forward in the video game world, is DayZ, and I want to be a part of that. And I know that they're talking about porting it to consoles eventually or whatever, but I don't want to wait that long, and I think a port to console would kind of dilute the game experience too. So
yeah,
that's one of the main reasons why I'm getting a gaming PC right now. We just sort of talked about that the PlayStation 4 is getting something of like a 660 Ti graphics card, and that's sort of already on its way, or it's sort of already onto the wayside. Not saying it's a bad graphics card at all, because it's still a very good one, but you know, I want to be able to buy something that I can upgrade whenever I feel like I need to. With the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 4, you can't do that. You're stuck with what you have, and while the graphics are pretty, they're not up to their full, you know, function.
Capacity.
Yeah, it just... So, I just want to venture into the PC world and see what it has to offer. You know, you always see the bashing on forums and comment sections of YouTube videos and everything about PC versus console. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if one is better than the other. You know, they each offer something. They bring something to the table. But I just want to experience it. I think I'd be missing out if I didn't.
Exactly. And, you know, I would say that we're pretty hardcore gamers. We play a lot of video games. And I think it's actually kind of a bad excuse for us not to be really into the PC gaming community, just because to only be console gaming limits how much you're going to be able to play and what you're going to see. The biggest reason why I'm doing it, the games look 10 times better. If you watch a Skyrim video on Xbox 360 and then watch a Skyrim video on a maxed out PC, it blows you away how much better the game looks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, with the amount of, I don't know how I want to say this, but, like, I'm kind of getting sick of people on PSN and Xbox 360 on Xbox Live, you know? Like, and now that those games, that consoles are getting so cheap, it kind of brings, like, a different personality into those realms. But yet the really serious gamers, like, that are willing to spend the kind of money that we're going to be spending.
Or the quote-unquote, like, elitists.
Yeah, the elitists that spend that kind of money. Like, it's not that... Well, I mean, there are 12-year-old kids who are on there with a lot of money, but it's not that every 12-year-old kid with an Xbox Live account. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I agree. I mean, take playing Battlefield the other day, you know, we're just sitting there having a conversation between you and I, and you can... Obviously, everybody knows how to mute somebody on PlayStation, but a certain guy chose not to mute us, and, you know, he starts sending us hate mail about our conversation, which he was never a part of. He didn't even have a mic to communicate with us, and he didn't ask us, hey, could you not, you know, not talk about this or anything? He just sends us threatening mail on the PSN, and granted, I'm not scared of this dude or anything like that. It's just...
No, you gave him your phone number. He never called you.
Yeah, no, we're just trying to have a good time, and we're just having a conversation exactly like how we're talking now. And he felt like we were not talking about important stuff, or our views were incorrect. So he let us know, you know, how he felt about us. And let me just say his vocabulary was not solid. And, you know, it just...
I think he only knew, like, one word, and that's,
yeah.
I'm not going to say it, but you know what?
Yeah, so, I mean...
If you've ever played any kind of online gaming, you realize what kind of words you get called on there really, really quickly.
Oh, for sure. And I don't mind, you know, like, having to deal with that playing Call of Duty or whatever, or even like that. But it's not like we were going out and like, oh, hey, you dirty little blah, blah, blah. We weren't trying to do anything. I mean, he was on our team and stuff. We were just having a conversation about, like, politics
It wasn't even that political. I can't even remember what we were talking about.
Yeah, so I was just like, are you kidding me right now? And I'm not saying that by switching to PC that's going to solve the issue, because I know there's still going to be guys like that on the PC and whatnot. But
I think, like, if it can weed out 10% of it,
it's going to make it far. Better. Well, you're not going to have every brosive playing with their girlfriend sitting right next to him trying to, you know,
impress her.
Say his penis is bigger than yours, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it's really, you know what, like, and the games are legitimately better on PC. Like, they are. You know, like, you never have the problems with, like, we had with Skyrim on the PC.
Right.
You know?
And I know some games, they do feel like they get secondhand, you know, because some games they do make for, like, the Xbox and then port it over to PC, and it's a poor port, which is exactly what happened with the PlayStation 3 and Skyrim, you know? So, I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. I just think when you look at, too, the ability for mods, which is not something you can ever do on a PS3, you know? But that whole DayZ game you just brought up is a mod off of Arma 2 and a couple expansions. So... to be able to be part of the mod community too and try out different things with different games, I just think it really, really opens up the door for a lot more opportunities. Now, I'm not going to stop playing consoles. You know, like, every year I have to get NCAA.
It's games like sports. That are always going to, for me, have to be played on a console, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's the best sports game that's out there. Maybe you could make an argument NHL, but I think that that NCAA blows Madden out of the water.
Oh, by far. I agree. I think it's way more enjoyable of a game.
But, you know, it's a tough one. You know, like, I'm just actually really excited. All my parts are shipping right now, so...
Well, speaking of which, let's go ahead and go through it. Do you have yours pulled up, or...? Our computers are pretty similar, so I have the list pulled up here. If you just want to go ahead, we can kind of go through it. I mean, we can start with the CPU since we're getting the same identical ones. Yeah, we're going to do the Intel Core i5 3570K, 3.4 gigahertz. So, you know, not top process of the line, but it's as good as we need, you know?
Yeah, and when we overclock it, it's going to be more than enough for right now. And I was talking to one of my people at my job, and they were saying, well, why don't you just get an i7? And it's like, I'm finding the screaming deal on Amazon. To me, right now, it's not worth spending, what is it, $400 for an i7?
It's $100 more, pretty much, from what the i5 is. It's $100.
It's right now, it's not worth it. Now, maybe in a year... maybe if the i9 or whatever gets released, then maybe I'll upgrade, you know?
Yeah, and with the motherboards that we're choosing, it has the same chip layout, so you could switch out to an i7, no problem.
Yeah, and then, I mean, just a real basic CPU cooler. I mean, nothing really special there. But yeah, we got the ASRock 77 Extreme 4 ATX. Now, this is all very technical, but I mean, pretty standard motherboard. Got 8 gigs of RAM. And then, I mean, a lot of this, like, it just kind of sounds like we're speaking technical jargon, and we kind of are, but I mean, I'm going with a 1 terabyte hard drive, and then.
1 terabyte's probably more than you ever need. A lot of people will say that you need to get an SSD, which. If you can afford it, go for it, because it boots your computer up really quick. Instead of having to sit there for like 30 seconds to a minute for your computer to start up, it starts up much faster, but they're also really expensive. Like, we're getting a 1 terabyte for like $70, $80, something like that.
Yes, mine's $69.89.
Yeah, and for her like 120 gigs of an SSD or something like that, it's over $100, so it's a big trade-off, that's for sure.
Well, the biggest thing is obviously the video card that you get. And I'm getting the... which one did you end up getting?
I'm probably just going to stick with the EVGA GeForce GTX 670 2GB version for the win.
Yeah, the FTW version. Yeah. And that's the same one that I have. You can get it off Newegg right now for... $409, but it's got a $20 mail-in rebate. But don't get me started on $20 mail-in rebates, because they're really even not worth it.
Yeah, they make it really difficult, and they want it to be difficult so that way nobody does it, because then they don't have to give the money back, you know? They do the rebate, so you buy their product, and then you're like, well, this is a pain in the butt, so you don't do the rebate in the end. Yeah. And so it's a win-win for them, you know? You bought their product, and you didn't send in the rebate.
Exactly.
But before we move on to the next thing, I just want to touch on the 4GB version. If you're planning on building a PC, or if we kind of spur you on or whatever, the 670 is a pretty good card for value, you know, bang for your buck. You can definitely go with, you know, like the Radeons and stuff like that. But like the 7850s and whatnot, I mean, I think I might have a number there wrong, but, like I said, we're kind of new to all this. I've just done a lot of research, but if you want to stick with the 670, and you want to sort of future-proof your PC, you can go ahead and get the 6GB for the Win version, and that will help you when you, two-way SLI it. It'll give you
your... And for somebody who doesn't know what that means, what does that mean to do a two-way
SLI? Two-way SLI is, if you get a motherboard that supports it, it's you have one video card in there, and then you place in a second video card, and you connect the two, so that way the two video cards share, splitting like the graphical data, you know, when you're playing a video game and it's loading all the textures and everything that's going on pretty much in the video game, instead of having it one card focus on it, it splits that same amount of information between the two cards. So obviously you're going to get better performance, and that helps you kind of get some longevity out of your PC, because you could buy one 670 right now at the price of $409, and then a year or two from now when they go down in price, you can add a second one on, and you know your PC will still be able to play the top end games on the highest settings for another year, or you know, so forever how long. And like we said, they came out with the GTX Titan now, which is like three levels ahead. There's we're the 670, there's a 680, there's a 690, and then there's the Titan. So you can see how fast that video cards evolve.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the rest of the kind of stuff that we just got is mostly just, you know, a power supply, operating system, and kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, make sure when you're doing it, you know, you get a good power supply. You want it to be like bronze, silver, or gold certified. You can stay within your budget, you know, but if you can spend more money, get a modular one so you don't have to stuff a bunch of cords in there. You can, it just helps clean it up a little bit. You know, you can go cheap on the case, but you get what you pay for, kind of. If you're building a high-end rig, you better get a decent case is all. And, you know, like Zach said, an operating system is kind of important, so.
Yeah, and then one of the best features, I think, about this PC part picker is it has a price history thing on the bottom, and you can set yourself to get alerts that when certain parts drop below certain prices, it'll email you an alert with a quick buy now button to buy it right off the bat. Boom.
Yeah, no, this site is really sweet. Like Zach said, it's pcpartpicker.com, and it compares prices at a few websites like Amazon, Newegg, Outlet PC, Micro Centers,
Best Buy.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, of course, it probably leaves a few websites out, but it makes your job a lot easier, and I like the layout, how it lists all the parts that you've chosen, and then it tells you how much it's going to be with shipping, tax, your rebates, everything, so you know exactly how much it's going to cost. You know, there's no like gray area, so it's really handy.
Yep. Yeah, I just highly recommend it. I mean, if you're at all interested, I mean, they have some really awesome too, just like custom builds of other people's, and like, you know, they're like $5,000, but it's like six monitors, and you know, it'd be like two of the best graphics cards out there, you know. It's just really interesting to look at.
There's some really sweet builds on there, but you know, definitely out of my price range. You know, all of our things together, we're trying to stay under $1,500 is pretty much what our goal was. So when you're building one, just stay within whatever price range you can.
And obviously, you know, kind of go through, pick the parts, and then don't be sticker shocked. And then kind of maybe go through and maybe pick something that's a little bit cheaper, you know?
Yeah, the two most expensive things are pretty much going to be your processor and your graphics card. So do what you will with that information, you know? So Hope we didn't bore you to death with all the computer talk. We're going to go ahead
it got,
and
it got
move
a little
on
technical
to...
there.
What's that?
It got a little technical right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, we did get a little technical, but that's A-okay, you know. We're going to go ahead and move to our section, what you've been playing, because we've been playing a game or two like Mad Men. And the first game that we've been playing a lot of was Final Fantasy VIII. Now, why don't you lay it on us, Zach?
Yeah, I beat Final Fantasy VIII, I think, at just under 60 hours or something like that, which is a lot of time committed to it. But it's been so long since I've played it, and I don't think I've ever actually beaten it, because like when I played it when I was a little bit younger, it's kind of interesting to go back and play some of your favorite games when you're a little bit older and have maybe a little bit more gaming skill, because, man, did I abuse the system in this game, and I got it so I was the bet, like, I was so, my characters were so overpowered, it made the game a cakewalk, and I really enjoyed it, actually, playing it with that kind of quote-unquote easy mode. But the great thing about Final Fantasy games is the developers aren't stupid. They don't see like, oh man, I never thought that he would abuse it that way. They know exactly how you're supposed to abuse it, and they put that in the game so it makes it so when you get to the end that you can actually just kind of play it for the conclusion as opposed to just trying to barely survive, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. What did you think of the whole story and everything like that? I mean, just as a
after
game
it
in general?
After it ended, I thought, you know, that was kind of interesting, and I did some internet research and found a couple theories about what's going on, and at first I thought, well, this theory is kind of cool, and then I read through it, and then I read the first comment, and then I agree with the comment way more than I did the actual internet story. But
Let's go ahead and drop the spoiler alert real quick, and why don't we go ahead and talk about it a little bit?
Okay, so we'll give a fair spoiler alert warning. Basically, you fight Altamisha. You're in time compression, so that is the past, the present, and the future all mixed into one in one single like timeline. And when you beat her, you kind of go back through time compression, and it makes it so everything, you kind of relive your life really, really quickly. And there's some interesting imagery that's kind of thrown in there. And the popular internet theory that I found is that actually Squall, who is the main character from Final Fantasy VIII, is dead. And he dies at the end of Disc 1 when he's impaled by a big ice shard. And then it kind of goes on to explain that everything that happens prior to Disc 1 is really more lifelike. And then everything that happens after Disc 1 is more dreamlike. And there is some validity to that, but it kind of falls apart when you start looking at a little bit other things, kind of more with the story and like, if he's really dead, then how come you keep dreaming back to Lugana and stuff like that? But
yeah, the guy's theory was definitely interesting. Like you said, the first comment below kind of rationalized the whole story.
Well, okay, to be fair, the first comment was a quote from Squall saying, "Whatever." And, you know, that was really kind of comical.
Well, yeah, the first, that was hilarious, but the first, you know, rebuttal to the whole website, which was very well done. I mean, I give the guy props and stuff, and he definitely thought outside the box, but it was more from out there, and the guy's comment was definitely more rational, but not saying the Squall's Dead theory is wrong, because I think that's the way Square Enix wanted you to interpret it, was however you so chose, you know? And I think that's the best part about Final Fantasies, is they leave a lot of stuff open. I mean, it was kind of the same way with 10, sort of a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
It lets you draw your own conclusions, and I know some people really don't like that. They like to be led down the path and stuff, but that's usually not why you play a Final Fantasy, though, you know? Yeah. So I felt like it was fine. The story for me, compared to other Final Fantasies, wasn't my favorite. Not to say it was bad, because it's definitely better than a lot of other games, but I definitely liked 7's story more, I like 9's story more, and I like 10's story more. So when you put it in context, I mean, it kind of falls to the end of the line, but that's not to say I didn't like it. It's just up against some stiff competition.
Okay, so let me talk a little bit about the story. I kind of actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was really interesting. It's not so much set in the fantasy element. You're basically a mercenary soldier for hire. You go on your big first mission, and it goes off really, really well. You kind of save a whole little town, and you're given your next mission, which is to assassinate the sorceress. That doesn't go so well. And you kind of, it's kind of like a story of redemption. You're like given control. Now, see, this is where I think that the Squall's Dead theory has the biggest impact. You are 17 years old in this game, and yet you are given control and you are made the leader of a huge, whole, big military operation at the age of 17, and they just chalk it up to fate. And I think that's where that dream or that Squall's Dead theory kind of comes in, saying like you're in a dreamlike state, which everything happens your way. And that kind of is like they draw a parallel with Vanilla Sky, which is kind of the same thing, where it's like after a certain point in that movie, everything starts happening for the character. And that's kind of how it is in Final Fantasy VIII, you know? Like, he gets the girl, he's given control of the garden, he saves the world. And that's kind of everything happens for him perfectly. And I think that's kind of where that Squall's Dead theory is really interesting. But I thought it was, it posed a lot of questions. There was some character development. I just thought it was really good. But the story's only maybe a quarter of while you play Final Fantasies. What did you think about the battle system?
It was fun. Like you said, abusing the system was really easy. I found myself not grinding for levels as much as I was grinding for the magic, you know, having to draw the magic out of everybody and stockpile it. The whole system, just in general, was kind of easy to abuse. You could go into battle with Squall with, you know, in yellow health, and you could just use his limit break over and over and over. Or you could just cast an aura on him and use it a bunch. So, I mean, like you said, the developers knew what they were doing. They're not dumb. They meant it to be played this way. And I, too, enjoyed it. You know, I kind of wish there was, like, a New Game Plus or something like that that would have harder difficulty.
Yeah.
So you could go back and abuse the system, but it is more difficult, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, like, the gameplay is actually one of the more enjoyable ones for me. I don't know, there was just something about it. Like the first time I played through this when I was a bit younger, I solely relied on GFs. And then, like, as soon as I got past, like, level 30 in this game, I never used GFs. Like, I had a healing character, I had Squall who hit, like, a Mack truck, and then I had another character who would mug everything out of everybody. And it's kind of one of these things of, like, once you're ahead of the game on that game, like, you know, you get, like, a really good draw from somebody, then it's way, like, everything just cascades out of control, and you're way too good for it. And it gets to a point where, like, it was kind of like that for me in Final Fantasy IX, too. And then it gets more about just playing through. And I even put Encounter Half on, so that means I fought half as many battles for, like, the last third of the game. And it was more about playing through for the story and just, like, seeing cool moves and getting the ultimate weapons and kind of the things that I always look for in a Final Fantasy game. And I just, you know, like, where do I rank it? In my favorite Final Fantasies, it's tough. 7 is one that I definitely need to revisit because it's one that I haven't played a ton, especially in my adult life. I really, really enjoy 9, and 10 is my favorite. I think 10 is where Final Fantasy peaked. But
all right, it's so
definitely, overall, it's endorsed. It's really good.
Okay, so out of you know, a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high, 1 being low, obviously, what do you give Final Fantasy VIII?
Maybe like an 8. I mean, that's
Final Fantasy VIII earns an 8. I would say a 7, just because the story wasn't as appealing to me as it was to you, but that by no means does not mean the battle system wasn't good, and, you know, for its time, the cutscenes were phenomenal.
I mean, the cutscenes still look pretty good today, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I give it a solid 7 out of 10, you know? But I can't argue with you giving it an 8 at all.
I think the thing that you also have to remember, too, is that when this game was released, it was released after 7, which was, like, game of the year everywhere and critically acclaimed, saying like this is the greatest thing ever made. And for them to make set, they could have easily made 7-2, just set in a different world, you know, like. But they completely changed the whole battle system. And I think that's what you kind of have to remember too, is like, it's really easy just to chalk it up against like Final Fantasy VII or Final Fantasy IX and be like, well, this isn't as good. But you kind of have to also remember, like, they could have just rested on their laurels, but they kind of took a really big step. And it's just like, you'll never play a game that's like it, you know, like, just, it's less about using your magic as an offense and more about bolstering your raw stats to make it so your people can withstand attacks, and it's just really interesting.
So, Final Fantasy VIII, in closing, is A to Z approved.
Yeah, definitely is. We'll go on, we'll move, since we both beat Final Fantasy VIII, we kind of drifted for a day or two wondering what to play, and then you just manned up and said, throw in Skyrim, so we're sucked back into Skyrim.
And we're not going to talk about this too terribly long, because we know that people have played Skyrim to death, and the PlayStation just got the DLCs not too long ago, you know, but we just wanted to let you know what we were doing.
Yeah, and it's really enjoyable. It's, without a doubt, I can 100% say the best video game that I've ever played.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. Aside from, you know, like the few little bugs that kind of make me upset, and them, you know, releasing the DLCs so late. I mean, I would be on the same page with you. I'd say it's probably one of the greatest games I've ever played, aside from those few minor setbacks, or maybe not minor to some people, but I'd be really hard-pressed to find a game that is better than this.
Yeah. Like, you just have to look, like, I am, like, 75 hours into Skyrim and still playing away. Like, I haven't even done any of the magician missions, Winterhold College missions, and 75 hours in, you know, and you still keep trucking away, and there are things that you can do in this game that, I mean, it's the little things that set this game apart from something else, you know, like, it's the way that the sneaking works, or it's the way that you can literally jump up a straight mountain, and I don't know.
Yeah, there's just lots of really cool features. If you've ever played it, you'd understand, and maybe some people that have played it don't understand, you know, and I feel bad for them, because if you didn't really give this, what's that?
You're missing out.
Yeah, you absolutely are. If you didn't give this game a chance, I feel terrible for you, because this is one of the greatest games that I've played. If you played Skyrim, or if you ever had any reservations about playing it or anything, just buy it and play it. You can get it for pretty cheap now, and just play the crap out of that thing. Like Zach said, you can be 70 hours in and literally have not done any of, like, the main quests at all. You could play for 70 hours and not do, like, a single quest almost.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you'd be running around a lot, but I mean, it's just got so many things. Personally, the two best things in this game were, without a doubt, the Thieves Guild missions were my personal favorite. I had more fun doing those missions than basically any other video game I've ever played, with a close second followed behind the Dark Brotherhood, and they're just really, really fun. The main quest in this, I mean, to me, these Elder Scroll games are never about the main quest, because I hardly ever play them, you know. I powered through this one, and made my decisions and killed the main guy, and I don't really care, you know. I think that's what makes Skyrim so great, is like, who cares about the main mission, man? It's all about everything else you can do.
Yeah, totally. It's just a good time. I think my favorite part about this game is running around on Shadowmere and just archering dudes. I have so much fun. Or just taking Shadowmere up a straight cliff, just the side of a cliff, hopping up with Shadowmere, and nothing is more enjoyable to me than that. That's what I've been doing. It's just like running around killing people, collecting souls so I can increase my enchanting skill while on the back of Shadowmere. That's literally my favorite part of the game right now.
Yeah, it's really fun. Skyrim is, it does have its problems, like especially on the PS3, but I can it's so great that I'm willing to overlook it. You know, like, I'm willing to overlook a poor PS3 port. I'm willing to overlook that we didn't get the DLCs because they would never work. You know, it's okay because this game is so great and the things you can do in it are so much fun. Who cares?
Okay, so going back to the 1 out of 10 system, what do you give it?
Oh, it's a 10 out of 10.
All right. For me, it's a 9 out of 10 because of the few things, like you just said, the small bugs, the DLCs coming out late and all that. If it wasn't for that, I think it would be a 10 out of 10. But because of that...
11 out of 10, a 12 out of 10.
Yeah, but because of that, I can't push it to the perfect 10 out of 10, but 9 out of 10 is darn close.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something still in the Elder Scrolls kind of thing. Because Skyrim is a completely 100% solo player game, which is really rare to find that, because most games are multiplayer focused, that you can still find a game like out there like this, but they've already announced that the Elder Scrolls Online is the next one coming out. It's going to be an MMO. Just give me your quick thoughts on it.
You know, as an MMO, I don't know if I'm super excited. What I wish is, like, you could play Skyrim with your buddy. I wish you and I could be, like, on the same game, running around, killing dragons together, or kind of like that whole Lord of the Rings game we played, sort of, you know? That, to me, would be more fun if they gave you an online capability to where you could go and play with...
Kind of more like a co-op as opposed to a multiplayer?
Yeah, exactly. That, for me, would be more fun. Now, I am excited for the Elder Scrolls Online. I think it's going to be a fun game, but I think it would be more enjoyable for me if I could just play with one or two or three of my friends versus a full world.
Yeah, exactly. It legitimately concerns me because I think the thing that Skyrim does that's so great is it immerses you in the world. You really feel like you're in. Very few video games make you feel like you're there. You know, I think that's the thing that Final Fantasy VIII did, or excuse me, X did so well, is that it really immersed you in the whole world of Final Fantasy X. You really felt like that. And then I think that's what Skyrim does, you know? It's just like this really whole kind of immersive thing. And I think, like, when you start throwing in other people, now I will agree with you, co-op, like, you know, maybe a four-player thing would be really, really awesome. Maybe even like a Borderlands thing, you know, like... You can play by yourself, or you can throw another friend in with you, and then you get better loot kind of system. I would be really a fan of that. But when you start getting that many people, you know, like a whole server's worth of people on there, it just invites, like, something where it's going to draw you out of the game, and you don't feel like you're really there, or, you know, like, it's just people cheating and stuff like that. And that's what legitimately worries me about it, you know?
Yeah, at Skyrim, they already have you with companions and stuff that follow you around, you know? So it's what's the difference between having companions follow you around and having two-player co-op or four-player co-op or, you know, whatever? There's so little between what it is now to what I wish it would be that's what I would like to see happen, but we'll see what happens. Either this is going to be really warmly received and it's, you know, it's going to go great, or they'll never do this again, you know?
Yeah. But I think that's pretty much it. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Nope. That's all I've got for today. So I think we're going to go ahead and call it here, guys. Thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Once again, just spread the word if you enjoyed our show. Let people know. Just remember, we don't always do the same thing every week. We have it pretty regimented. If you go back to our first podcast and listen, it tells you exactly how we break everything down and what day we do what.
Yeah, next week's actually going to be the movie podcast, so we'll kind of be talking about movies and TV shows. So we'll be talking about that next week. So
yeah, go ahead and, like I said, spread the word. We appreciate it. But anyways, thanks for listening, guys. I'm A.
And I'm Z.
And we'll talk to you later.
Bye.